gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National People Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the joint venture of free speech because Dr. Duke and I are doing this show as a joint venture. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send all your shekels to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Friendly operators are standing by. Back to you, Dr. Duke.
Okay, well, good. Thank you so much. And I'm glad that this program is being aired on your show, too, as well as our show. And because I think the wider the audience, the better. We've been talking about a lot of very dramatic occurrences, and I might say horrific occurrences, in terms of the standards of freedom in this country and in terms of the fact that we're living under a dictatorship. And that's about the only way you can put it. I mean, it's not a nice term to use, but there really is a dictatorship by a tiny minority that's dictating our policies, that's making your money by the billions go to Israel and go to the genocide of tens of thousands of Palestinian children, that's making America hated all over the world. And interestingly enough, the same Jewish media often is using what's going on to say to a whole bunch of other people, a certain segment of the population, because they're really great at divide and conquering, is they'll say, oh, see, this just proves the racism of white people. It's America that's behind the genocide that's going on in Palestine. It's America. The Jews are doing America's bidding. No, the Jews are the tail that wags the American dog. It's our money. It's our weapons. It's our powerful media economic influence. It's our authority that's able to have 800 bases all over the world to enforce Jewish dictatorship, truly, around the world. Or the small Jewish minority that controls politics in America dominates it. We can't say they control every politician because they don't. They don't control every decision. Sometimes they don't even completely succeed. But if you look at the thrust of American policy, these insane wars like the Iraq War, a dangerous war, which I just saw Finkelstein on air this morning talking about, we have a real chance of nuclear war here. That these Jewish lunatics who control Israel and really control the media. Now, he doesn't talk about this much. He kind of takes the Noam Chomsky way. He's kind of from the Marxist tradition. But it's not America and American imperialism. It's certainly not the interest of the American people that have pursued these wars over the last 150 years. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the First World War or the Second World War or all the biggest wars since that time. I don't think they've served the interest of the European people. A lot of European people died in those wars. The European people spent trillions in those wars.
For one, want to butt in a second.
Yeah, please, butt. Anyway.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Norman Finkelstein, and he is calling Israel a lunatic state.
Yeah, that's great.
Yesterday we were discussing some Muslim guy who was calling us all white supremacy, and he was going in that direction. And, you know, Noam Chomsky, his position... I mean, he's been very critical of Israel and Zionism and whatnot. Well, I don't know if he's been critical of Zionism per se. Actually, I heard Norman Finkelstein say that Chomsky's a self-proclaimed Zionist, but his version of Zionism is very different from what's practiced in Israel. Okay, leave that aside. Finkelstein is not deflecting this, not calling this white supremacy. He's not calling it Judaism. He's calling it lunacy. He says that the Israelis are lunatics. Two other people I want to bring up that you're familiar with from the Gray Zone, Aaron Mate and Max Blumenthal. And they're not calling this white supremacy.
No.
They're getting a lot closer. I mean, they're saying it's Zionism, and they're talking about...
And they're talking about Jewish extremists and Jewish extremists.
They're talking...
Meaning the religion. You know, that's the biggest lie nowadays, right, is that the religion is not racist like the Israeli state is. Somehow the religion is good, but Israel is bad because it's secular. That's crazy.
Yeah, Norman Finkelstein was saying that the Judaism...
Let me butt in once in a while, too, okay?
Yeah, I just want to finish this point. The Judaism he grew up with was nothing like this. What he's saying in Israel is pure lunacy. But what Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate, they are saying that... The you know, the schools and the politicians are bowing down to their donors, but they are not just, they're not just leaving it at donors like Alexander Mercurius does. They're saying they're Zionist donors. They're donors who are beholden to Israel. So they're getting a lot closer. They're not quite, they're not quite calling this all Jewish, but
well, they're avoiding the term. Even Mearsheimer says, doesn't call it the Jewish lobby, even though it's overwhelmingly Jewish. He calls it the Israeli lobby. But these are Jews, whether they're Israelis or not, whether they're in Israel or supporting the policy of Israel. They don't always even support the policy of Israel. But one thing that these Jewish billionaires do is they advance what they think are their interests, are in the interest of Jews as a whole, as a group. Even the ones that want Israel to kind of pull back a little bit because it's threatening their own support and own power in the West, and they don't want to lose the whole apple cart because of that individual on the apple cart sitting on top of the, you know, the apple cart with a pistol and shooting down kids, you know, as the cart passes. They don't want their cart to be toppled by these crazy lunatic Jews. But even they, in many cases, a good example is George Soros, who, by the way, has been one of the biggest activists for the destruction of European mankind and the transformation of Western nations, European nations, to a dislocation and a replacement of the people who created those nations to begin with. And ironically, it's often said, in fact, I just heard a Jew this morning, I was listening to one of these broadcasts, who was critical of what Israel is doing in Palestine. And she was talking about how her mother was so busy, you know, she was supporting these Jews who were traveling south to mobilize and increase the black bloc vote. Well, the truth is that I believe that Jews haven't had another motive in increasing the black bloc vote. They saw, in fact, I read about this from Jewish Marxists and others who said that they weren't going to win the American working class. It was too Christian. It was too right wing. It was too white. They weren't going to win that. They needed a proletariat in America that they could mobilize, which they thought they could mobilize to overturn the government, as they talked about the proletarian revolution in the Soviet Union. And so they saw black people as that proletariat. And one of the important aspects of this was that the black people, if black people really had a better life, and they were moving toward a better life in this country in many, many ways, they were certainly, their income was increasing, many black business people, they had many black communities, for instance, in New Orleans, that were very thriving economically. And there were a lot of black people who believed in black empowerment. Not, they weren't in favor of integration. In fact, many of them were opposed to it. And one of the best examples of that I can give you is the NAACP's communist leader. He was an open communist, W. D. Du Bois, but he was probably the biggest black name in the NAACP, famous and respected as a great black intellectual and so forth. And he broke with the NAACP, because he came to be more on the side of black nationalists than the integrationists. He came to be more on the side of more black universities, more black technical schools, more black community empowerment, more black, and to strengthen the black family, not to weaken it, and to not be used in this, not to be a minority under white people in mixed districts in schools, but allowing blacks to maintain their own schools and a sense of their own dedication to each other and their own principles and what they thought would be good for black people. And he had a big fallout with the NAACP, which was run by Jews, because what Jews saw black people as was a way, if they could empower their vote and they could make a bigger, even though blacks didn't vote as obvious as much as their numbers, and there were many obstacles that were put in their way, obviously, too. But to do that, it would be very important for them to be that kind of balance of power. And so, if they could divide white people on different issues, say labor management, or on feminist issues, the feminists on one side, or even the LGBTism, or critical race, all these divisions, if they could divide white people on these issues, but then they could rely on a black bloc vote, or a vote, a minority vote, they could already rely on the Jewish bloc vote, which has really voted almost in toto for every candidate in terms of president, overwhelmingly for one president or one candidate or the other. It's almost been Democrats the last few decades. But that is a means to control. It's like a divide and conquer policy. So I agree that you know, I think some Jews were deluding themselves, thinking they were, oh, they're fighting for black rights. And I think many were sincere in that. And some Jews were enlisted in that cause sincerely. But at the same time, I think the Jews at the top knew exactly what they were doing. They knew, I'll give an example. They've always been in favor and promoting affirmative action, which is nothing more than racial discrimination against better qualified white people. Now, this was never really going against Jews, even though Jews said it might be a threat to us, but it never did. And Jews are so far overrepresented in college campuses, college admissions, than Gentiles, who are less qualified for the same positions. This is something you and I've been over so many times on this broadcast over these last few years. And it's really amazing. I mean, according to Hillel, 50% of the graduate students, the PhD candidates at Harvard, are Jews. I mean, Jews are only 2% of the population. And even if you thought that Jews were 50% more likely to be smart than whites, at 2%, that would make 3%, not 50% of the elite candidates. And even Jews at Harvard have not outperformed Gentiles, whom they outnumbered, by the way, at Harvard. And many of the Ivy League schools, they've the Gentile, even though they've outnumbered the Goyim, are the white Goyim, and whites have been replaced because I think that Jews saw every replacement of a white intellectual, a white intelligent kid, a white smart, young, bright kid who might be of traditional values in America, anytime they could replace them by a minority was something that they felt they would increase their influence. And just like David Brooks said in the New York Times article, he talked about the Jewish takeover of the American elite. And that's exactly what's happened in the United States. I don't want to dwell on this too long, but yeah, you were somebody that was involved a lot in as a Goyim, but you were involved a lot in the civil rights activities and movement, anti-war probably more specifically. But they used all these movements in a way at the same time that they were against the war in Vietnam. You saw at the same time the rising anti-Russian sentiments of Jews, to where now they've pretty much taken over much of the left, even not all of it, but much of the left, because of the fact that they kind of knew that the Jews were losing out in power in what was the Soviet Union, and that they saw that as a threat to them, because when they controlled communism, they had a lot of power under their fingernails, a lot of power under their power. And they... So, I mean, I don't. What's some of your take on that, my friend?
Yeah, I'm not muted. I've always been very involved in the anti-war movement, which got me involved in the Jesse Jackson campaigns of '84 and especially '88.
That's so shocking to hear. Really, I'm still kind of shocked every time you tell me that. Well, but I understand why. I understand why.
Out of all of the candidates who were invited to major party debates, okay, in the 1980s. Jesse Jackson was the one that was getting the most grief from the Jews. Remember all that Hymetown controversy? Yeah. Getting a lot of heat from the Jews. He was the only one who had met with Yasser Arafat. That was more his wife's doing than his, but he met Yasser Arafat. He was the one who you know, flew over to Syria to get that airman peacefully out of Syria and back to the United States and tried to improve relations. So there were good aspects to him in the 1980s. In the 70s and the 90s, he was kind of a race hustler or whatever you want to call it. But in the 80s, he put that aside and as far as I could tell, and we were all very low info. We were low info people in the 1980s. There was no internet. But, you know, I actually worked at his headquarters. I knew pretty much what was going on with his campaign. And you know, you had a lot of there was definitely was getting a lot of heat from the Jews. I did have that experience. But primarily I've always been, you know, to the extent that I was rubbing elbows with these people, it was because we were both oriented towards peace and peace in the Middle East and justice for the Palestinians. And today it's the same thing today. Like these people on the campus who were doing the demonstrations 4 years ago, 3 years ago, a lot of these same people were probably out for Black Lives Matter and whatnot, which I didn't agree with, obviously. Yeah. But right now they are the tip of the spear. Right now I don't think they knew what they were signing up for, but they did. They wound up signing up for this, and they are making great sacrifices. I don't want them to have to make sacrifices, but they are. They're taking on risks. They're doing extremely important work, and I don't care who they were demonstrating for or against 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. They're doing the right thing now, and I, you know, I think I join you in supporting them, and it's sincere. It's very sincere admiration and support for these kids. They have been doing this very nonviolently. To the extent there's any violence, it is almost all the pro-genocide Jews and pro-Israeli people who were committing the violence. I guess there was maybe some Antifa provocateurs that joined in at Columbia, but it's almost all been openly pro-Israel people attacked. Like at
Israel. Oh yeah, it's been Zionist thugs is what it's been. Yeah. So, and by the way, there was some violence too at one of these institutions, and it turned out it was by Antifa. Now, I always have the question, of course we know what Antifa is, but we always have the question, and we've always known that Jews love to do this false flag operation. For instance, there was a big article in the Daily Beast the other day showing these Jews demonstrating with an Israeli flag. And so there's 100 protesters. And by the way, these were Palestinian, pro-Palestinians, but they weren't protesting for Palestine or for Palestinians. They were literally protesting against genocide, against one of the greatest crimes of the modern age, the crimes that we're witnessing, more than we ever have. I mean, it's just unbelievable, this destruction that's going on of these women and children by the tens of thousands, maiming of kids and murder of kids. And it's just incredibly obvious. But so they get up there at one of these demonstrations, I think it was at Northwestern, and they have a Mayor Israeli flag, and one of them starts, and I guess he was being, can I finish?
Northeastern University in Boston.
Northeastern, excuse me. Northeastern, yeah. Thank you for getting that clarified. So they were standing up, and they were being facetious. They were acting like facetious, but they said, kill the Jews, kill the Jews. And they're all on tape doing this. I mean, it was all real, right? But a lot of people, of course, couldn't see who was yelling that or doing that. And next thing you know, the media started reporting that people were shouting, kill the Jews, meaning that the opposers of genocide. Now, it's Palestinians that are getting killed en masse by Israel and being killed en masse by the American government that's supplying the bombs to use in Israel, and the media that's covering up for these crimes of Israel. Just as the same New York Times media tried to say that the Palestinians were systematically raping Israeli girls and beheading babies and everything else, which all turned out to be big, bald-faced lies, yeah. Right?
And while you've mentioned that, Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté on The Gray Zone in their most recent podcast from, it would have been, I guess, Tuesday, the 30th of April, they showed the, because this is on film, they showed the pro-Israel guy shouting, kill the Jew, or kill all the Jews. Can I get somebody to go along with me, kill all the Jews? It was clearly a pro-Israel guy who said it. And then this got reported to the university.
That's the height of chutzpah, right?
To arrest 100 of the anti-genocide protesters. And on that same show, they also referred to a previous show that they had made completely debunking this idea that there has been mass rapes and babies decapitated and whatnot.
Yeah, and there were no babies. There was no baby burned in an oven either. That was all a big lie too. And that was kind of like evoking the Holocaust. It's just like the Jewish foreign minister in Israel, remember the Knesset, what's her name, Shalomit Aloni, where she said that, the Holocaust, it's always a trick. We always use it. Whenever there's any legitimate criticism of Israel, we always bring up the Holocaust. It's like that old Polish proverb that's...
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
It's always a trick. We always use it. Whenever there's any legitimate criticism of Israel, we always bring up the Holocaust. It's like that old Polish proverb that's kind of a joke. Jews say this is a very anti-Semitic proverb that goes, a Jew always cries in pain as he strikes you. That's exactly kind of the law of the land right now in the society where they're killing tens of thousands of Palestinians. It's those Jews who are victims on campuses because they're made to feel bad because the Jewish establishment. And you also see another aspect of this, which is something that Finkelstein debunked in a program I saw this morning. He had a very good show, and he was talking about how people blame Netanyahu for all this. And he said, Netanyahu, he has no challenger. There's no other candidate because the people of Israel are supporting us. And he went into some of the polls, and he went into some, and he said, and there are extensive polls that are run. And he was showing in the very last poll they did just a couple months ago, they found that 95% of the Israeli people of Israel, 95% of them believe that they weren't doing enough against Gaza. They weren't doing enough against the Hamas people and so forth, that Israel was not doing enough against them. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So he was debunking this idea that somehow, you know, that significant percentages of Jews are opposed to it. Now, I do think there are a number of young Jews and other Jews, like everybody else, who is shocked and dismayed and is shocked to their foundations, especially because of the image they were given of Jews as the most holy people in the world and the great victims, to see this slaughter that's going on. And but they always present Jewish spokesmen and spokeswomen against this. But in reality, I just looked this morning. I said, well, let me look at the organization. So I looked at the most powerful, richest Jewish organizations, which are compiled, by the way, by the Forward newspaper. It's a major Jewish paper, been one of the oldest Jewish papers in America. And they have the Council of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, which are the 52 richest, most powerful, most influential. We're talking about organizations which have a combined yearly budget of about $24 billion every year through the advocacy for what they want: open borders, you know, the trade policies they want, support for Israel, the wars, whatever ad hoc Jewish war they want at the time, they're for it, whether it be the Iraq war, or whether it be the Ukraine war, or whether it be whatever, some war in El Salvador. They continually support these. And all of these groups are pro-Israel. None of these organizations have condemned Israel. None of these Jews have said we should stop supporting Israel. None of these Jews are labeling what's going on in Gaza genocide, even though it clearly is by every United Nations standard, by even the treaties that we've signed over on and we've supported ourselves and other countries have. It's very clear the definition of genocide, and there's no wiggle room that when you're killing a people all or in part and you're aiming mass murders against a particular people, nationality, race, religious group, whatever, that's considered genocide when you're killing people en masse. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're bombing tens of thousands of homes of people that people live in because of the wrong race. And most of these people are certainly not combatants in any way. And by the way, everything is such a cluster F in such a way by the media, because the lies go on every day. When you were talking about what happened at Northeastern, I guess you said, campus. When you talked about that and people were screaming, kill the Jews, and it was all a lie, and then they arrest all the people. They also call this for instance, what happened in UCLA. You had Jewish thugs. I mean, they were Jewish Zionist thugs with Israeli flags and everything else, and they had baseball bats and poles and sticks. And by the way, the police authorities and the mainstream authorities of these institutions have all stated very clearly that overwhelmingly these protesters have been nonviolent. They have not, been destructive. They've been nonviolent. These Jewish radical thugs came in and attacked them viciously, and you could see the films. AP, Associated Press, had a bunch of videos showing these. And these, so here's these students, pro-Palestinians, many of them Palestinians, by the way, often with the Palestinian scarves on and so forth, and they've got a little, barricade, or they've got a little makeshift, camp or tent, and they're hiding behind the tent, and these Jews are just railing them with, beating them over the heads and everything with baseball bats and everything else. It wasn't like fighting between these groups. It wasn't that at all. It was a vicious, racist, Jewish supremacist attack on people who were opposing the genocide being committed by Jews and the Jewish state of Israel against tens of thousands of Palestinian men, women, and children. It was a vicious, vile attack. And if it would have been me or you, doctor, or anybody else in, say, the European American movement, and we would attack Jews that way, we'd be facing prison for decades for doing this. It would be the biggest thing. The Justice Department, Mr. Merrick Garland, our Jewish head of the Justice Department, would be looking to charge us with massive federal hate crimes and terrorist crimes. But because it's Jews doing this against, Goyim for some part, and maybe some are integrated Jews, they were also going against, but, they hate Jews that they feel are traitors to them. But the point is, it's just amazing to think about the double standards we have right now in this country. And one last thing, and I'd like to get your comment on this too. There's been a lot written and a lot.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
This is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl.
The point is, it's just amazing to think about the double standards we have right now in this country. And one last thing, and I'd like to get your comment on this too. You know, there's been a lot written and a lot talked about in terms of Charlottesville. Now, you know, I don't know if you ever got close to it. I was close to it. You may have been. I don't know if you ever just went to go look or whatever politically. But I can tell you one thing, that I was there, and the whole thing was the biggest setup in the world. It was the white nationalists, the white people demonstrating, had to go to court to get their freedom of speech rights to actually go to a park, which is supposed to be available for any group. Black Lives Matter used those same parks. All these different groups did. And to get the park, to even have a permit to the park, to get everything set up with the speakers, because it was going to be a way for them to explain to the world their positions. This was all controlled by the city, a Jewish judge. And it actually was a huge conspiracy to create violence and use that violence as an excuse. And they supported Antifa. Antifa was arguing for violence against the people, people like myself and others that were at Charlottesville. And when they guided this over, the people who were participating in the march at a time were meeting at another park about three or four miles away. And then by shuttle buses were arranged to be shuttled over to the park. Now, they could have gone on a side street where they had National Guard and everything else, and they could have let the buses park on a side street where people could go in the back entrance of the park, fill in the park. But they didn't do that. What they did was the shuttle buses dropped everybody off, not in front of right in the gate where they could have secured that with massive police presence. They had National Guard around, too, that they could have used. No, they didn't do that. They dropped everybody off in these buses with 8 or 9, 10 people on a bus, small little shuttle bus, a block away And Antifa knew what was going on. They were all lined up on the streets like a gauntlet you see in the old cowboy Indian movies where the person's got to walk in the gauntlet of the Indians that are hitting them with tomahawks and so forth, whatever. And they had baseball bats. They had pepper sprays. One of them had a flamethrower. I mean, you can't make this up. They were throwing rocks. Yeah, I got hit by a rock. Big deal. I'm not complaining. I know there's always a danger. A lot of people did. And you had to walk between that. There was no security. The police made no effort to make any arrests. This wasn't white people going to this park to try to pick a fight with Antifa or black people or anything else. It was to be able to present our ideas to the world with major speakers to the world about what our complaints were, that we believed white rights were being destroyed, that we believed that our foreign policy was in the hands of these Jews. And by the way, we had many speakers there. We're going to speak against these wars in the Middle East and all these other wars going on around the world that are not good for America. And we had a chance to do that. They didn't want that to happen. But it was the white people who were prosecuted for defending themselves. And we're seeing the same things in terms of they're not pro-Palestinians. They're anti-genociders. They're anti-Jewish genocide. And by the way, that's how they should portray this. These are not people that are especially pro-Palestine. They'd be supporting anybody there who was being genocided by another powerful force. And by the way, it's not a war between Hamas and Israel. It's not a war that's going on there. Hamas and the Palestinians, they have no tanks. They have no heavy weapons. They have no artillery. They have no Hellfire missiles. They have no helicopters. They have none of this stuff. You know, this is not like what you think about two armies fighting together. This is a wholesale slaughter of innocent people, primarily children, because about half the population is children. And those are the victims in this war. Whereas when the Palestinians did October 7th, which is supposed to be an example of terrible brutality and horror, you know, and terrorism, 36 Israeli children died out of 1,200 people that died. But that's only 2.5% of the people that died were kids, but 40%
in Gaza.
Yes, exactly. And so, I mean, we're talking about between, well, 14,000, over 14,000 died, almost 15,000 now. And then you're talking about another double that. So another 30,000 more who are maimed. I mean, who've lost limbs, arms, and legs, or the right to ability to walk, or been burned horribly, or disfigured, and you know, brain damage, whatever. I mean, we're talking about the torture of tens of thousands of children, and 70% are women or children, not Hamas fighters. But so if Israel, you know, is fighting against this terrorist organization of Hamas because of what happened on October 7th, Israel is guilty of that 1,000 times worse than anything Hamas did to capital.
You mentioned Charlottesville, and you had gotten to Charlottesville. You weren't one of the organizers.
No.
You probably would have been asked to speak. I don't know why you would not have been.
I was asked to speak.
You weren't listed as a featured speaker, but I'm sure you would have been asked to speak.
Yeah.
I got there kind of late, and I remember calling you, and you told me that everything was getting broken up and that the governor had ordered a dispersal. So I got there kind of late. I wound up.
They couldn't stop the permit, so they couldn't. We got the law that we were supposed to be able to have a peaceful permit. So they basically let the communists attack people, and then use that as an excuse to stop our free speech.
That's the side I saw. You were being attacked. I was walking around, and this is by that time you had probably left town. But
did you have your Jesse Jackson mask on?
No, I didn't. I was walking around with my colleague, and we were we wandered over to this was right about the time that Heather Heyer got struck by the car.
So you didn't make it into the actual park. So you
I didn't. I didn't get to the demonstration. But what happened is after the demonstrators, they followed the governor's orders and they left or tried to leave. They were being attacked while they were leaving. But I did help some people from the League of the South. I saw them on the side of the road, and I drove them over to the car that they had in the parking lot. And then I went back for more, but there weren't any more left. And so we parked a couple of blocks from, I guess it was Lee Park, right? We parked in between Lee Park and what's called Jackson Park. And there was nothing going on in Lee Park. Everybody had been evacuated. We walked over to Jackson Park, which was being occupied by an Antifa group called, which I later found out was called Redneck Revolt. And I was taking some pictures.
They weren't urging any violence against those white people.
So Redneck Revolt, it was led by a professor from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill named Dwayne Dixon. I didn't know who he was, but I took pictures, and then later on, I saw that my pictures matched up, the tattoos, from the tattoo to the AR-15 that he was toting. And I was taking some pictures, and then one of his colleagues with a machete told me to put my damn phone away, using a little more coarse language than that. And that was that person later claimed to have pointed his AR-15 at James Fields, the lost young man who had driven
that poor son of a gun. I can't tell you that guy was park. He was afraid Dwayne for his life. He wasn't right. trying to kill
yeah.
anybody.
Well, listen. So he drove past that park. Dwayne Dixon pointed his rifle at him. He drove another two blocks, and then that's where the Antifa and Black Lives Matter were marching up that very same street. It was only two blocks away. And so he had just moments earlier been threatened with a rifle from this Antifa group. So he didn't want to go back. And these are very narrow streets.
And he was directed down a different street. He wanted to go home. In fact, he offered to take two other people back to their cars, and they said no, they had to go on home. So he wasn't planning on doing anything.
This is where I was. And these streets are over 200 years old. They're narrow. They're one way. When you're downtown, they're one way. So he had nothing to do except go straight. So he tried. He didn't.
They directed him that direction.
He did not go pedal to the metal. Tried to get through and hoped everybody would jump out of the way. Heather Heyer was over 300 pounds, 4'11" and over 300 pounds. She almost got out of the way, not quite. And apparently, according to her mother, died from a heart attack after being clipped in the leg. But at any rate, that's another story. But what you mentioned was the similarity between the tactics of the authorities against you and your colleagues in Charlottesville and against these people. And of course, you know, the people in Charlottesville, the rally was called Unite the Right. So it was supposedly a right-wing rally. These people on the college campuses are, they are left-wing, supposedly, but the tactics used against them are remarkably similar, calling out the violent Antifa people or other thugs to attack them, the police cooperating with the people who are attacking them. And what did the Unite the Right people and the anti-genocide demonstrators, what do they have in common? Well, they are a threat to the Jewish power structure. That's what they have in common.
Exactly right. Let me play a little clip from Owen Jones, who's an English commentator. He's done a lot of good stuff. I don't agree with him about everything, but he's sort of been right about the horrors about what's going on in Palestine. Let me play a little clip. He talks about these Zionist thugs attacking the student protesters. Here we go.
The whole world is watching. Overnight in the United States, students protesting against Israel's genocidal onslaught against Gaza have come under savage attack. Now, that attack has come from both the police and from pro-Israel mobs. The scenes which we're going to look at are hideous. And the experience will be traumatizing for those incredibly courageous students on the receiving end. A few comments, first of all. The whole world has watched the most obscene atrocities being committed against the Palestinian people on a daily basis now for about 7 months. And the whole world has listened to the incessant, blood-curdling, genocidal rhetoric of Israeli leaders as they put their murderous words into action. And the whole world has witnessed the brutality inflicted on those protesting against this genocidal mayhem. And the whole world will draw conclusions. Indeed, how millions upon millions of people look at the world is being changed forever. And the consequences of that will be felt for generations. And those now assaulting and cracking down on protesters against one of the worst crimes of our age should know deep down that history will impose an unforgivably devastating verdict on them. Back in the 1960s, students protesting against the Vietnam War were denounced and ridiculed by oh-so-clever newspaper columnists who variously labelled them as naive, as dangerous, as dupes for the enemy. And those student protesters were vindicated, not just partly, not just mostly, but entirely. And those oh-so-clever newspaper columnists got it completely and utterly wrong as they helped justify a war which spilled rivers of blood. So vindicated, in fact, that Columbia University, where once again student protesters have been attacked by the police, that university venerates the protesters of 1968 who were attacked by the police. Their official website includes a page headlined A New Perspective on 1968, the absolute front of this institution, claiming Columbia is a far different place today than it was in the spring of 1968 when protesters took over university buildings amid discontent about the Vietnam War, racism, and the university's proposed expansion to Morningside Park. Which then, this website references how the New York City police stormed the campus, and arrested hundreds, and that the fallout dogged Columbia for years. Well, history repeats itself, doesn't it? It doesn't often always repeat itself, but it often rhymes. When students protested against the Iraq War once again, they were denounced and ridiculed by oh-so-clever newspaper columnists. Once again, those student protesters were vindicated, completely vindicated, and those newspaper columnists once again have nothing more to be said about them other than they helped justify mass slaughter. I think it's about time these particular newspaper columnists shut up and listen to the protesters who keep getting vindicated over and over again. Today, again, Israel's genocidal onslaught, these student protesters are going to be even more vindicated than those before them, for reasons I'll explain. Now, at Columbia University, the cops stormed in, get this, exactly 56 years to the day when cops stormed Columbia University in 1968 to arrest Vietnam protesters. Now, you can hear tasers going off, students screaming, while they are assaulted by huge numbers of the police who arrived. As one US academic in New York puts it, please, I know that what happened at Columbia tonight is sickening, but this is part two. And our City University students are largely working class students of colour. But the most disturbing scenes, and these were still, obviously it's extremely important we show solidarity with those at Columbia, the most disturbing scenes was at University of California, Los Angeles, when pro-Israel thugs attacked the peaceful Palestinian Solidarity encampment in full view of a police force which did nothing.
Shocking video, too. You see this, it's amazing. The aggressors are the Jews.
The mainstream media has been describing this as a clash between protesters. That's a lie. Let's have a listen to Al Jazeera's correct framing of what happened.
There are various reports online describing it as violent clashes, violent confrontations, but just to be absolutely clear about what has unfolded over the past couple of hours, you have a mob waving Israeli flags whose identities were hidden beneath masks, who came from outside of the campus. They, as our correspondent was saying, don't appear to be of university age and were armed with pepper spray and sticks and using whatever they could to harass and instigate violence against the peaceful solidarity encampment of student protesters at UCLA. So, you know, not so much clashes as a mob attacking a group of protesters.
Well, that's exactly what happened here. A violent mob of pro-Israel thugs armed with weapons attacked a peaceful student protest against genocide. Now, for so long, we've been told that these protesters threaten the safety of their fellow Jewish students, willfully conflating opposition to the crimes of Israel with anti-Semitism and inventing lies about what these students say and do. But note that given the crucial presence of Jewish students at these protests, those being attacked and arrested will inevitably include Jewish students. And above all else, it's...
Of course, we've always got to say that. So anyway, that was really kind of an amazing amount of information there about what's going on. So you got, here are these people trying to protest genocide. And by the way, I talked to you this morning about that, how they did their poll at the university in New York and at Columbia. And the poll showed over 72% and 65% accordingly was for disinvestment from Israel and condemning of Israel and their genocide and so forth going on in Gaza. So the students are overwhelmingly in favor of this. So if you had a real system where they supported their students and they supported their faculty, and again, it's amazing this has even happened. You consider the Jewish control over our media and the lies that they continue to heap out upon our people. But it's amazing that there are so many people, even in the heart of New York. And again, I think they have a Jewish minority, but a Jewish plurality maybe on the campus, that, you know, is the only reason why it wasn't 99%, because they're most Jews, and I do think that some Jews are opposed to this genocide and don't support Israel in this, but I do think the vast majority of Jews, and certainly the Jewish establishment per se, is absolutely dedicated for Israel and basically is on the side of what Israel is doing and whatever Israel does. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Jewish establishment is why the United States supports Israel, the Jewish establishment, the Jewish
yeah.
why we send banking, massive yeah. amounts of weaponry yeah. in the midst of this, why we just appropriated $25 billion for Israel. On the college campuses, kids that age, I don't know what the proportion of Jewish students who are not in favor of this is. I'm sure there's a significant number who are not in favor of it, but I would think that the bulk of the Jewish students are probably they are the pro-Israel people. But there would certainly be a significant
level. There's a significant level.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's...
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
But I would think that the bulk of the Jewish students are probably they are the pro-Israel people. But there would certainly be a significant
there's a significant level. And I think a lot of these Jews, even though they support Jewish interests and Jewish people and they love Jewish people and they love Israel, but they also certainly don't want to be saddled with supporting a genocide state. And a lot of them feel like, you know, they have to speak up because they don't want to be labeled as genociders, and I can understand why they wouldn't be. And by the way, we got to get one more subject in this last couple of minutes that we have left. But so there's a big article that you probably know that Taylor Greene has really attacked this last bill.
Marjorie.
Say?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor.
Otherwise known as Large Marge.
Okay. So far right lawmaker claims bill passed by House could lead to conviction of Christians. Matt Gaetz, gospel itself would meet the definition of anti-Semitism under the bill. And it really is amazing what this bill actually does is it criminalizes things that you will actually find in the New Testament, because that's considered anti-Semitism. It's about making this broader definition of anti-Semitism. And by the way, the New Testament is considered anti-Semitic by in fact, Jews. And it's pretty shocking when you read the Jerusalem Post article I've quoted many times by Shmuley Boteach, another one of the genociders in Israel. But and we're almost out of time. But let me give you a couple of quotes that that Gaetz posted, which is kind of amazing, showing how that this bill, which a lot of Christians voted for, supposed Christians, it just shows you the Jewish power over our government. This is some of the things that would make illegal from the New Testament and literally could get people in prison for or harm for by doing this. He quotes Acts 4:10, "Be it known to you and all the people of Israel, but by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, by him this man is standing before you as well." So here's a case where they're talking about how Jews crucified Jesus, and they're claiming that's anti-Semitism to even say that what the New Testament says. Here's 1 Thessalonians 2:11 or 2:14, 16. For you, brethren, became imitators of the churches of God and Jesus Christ, which are in Judea. For you suffered the same things from your own countrymen as they did from the Jews, who killed both the Lord Jesus and the prophets and drove us out and displeased God and oppose all men and hinder us from speaking to the Gentiles that they might be saved. I mean, that's amazing, too, because that's exactly what goes on. If that's not what Jews are doing today in terms of the media moguls and the censorship and the Google and all the rest of it, right. keep us from speaking to the Gentiles that we might be saved, and Jews, too, for that matter, I guess. And his acts.
Time for me. I got to wrap up my show. I'm just going to thank
you. I'll let you go, and I'll see you again.
I'll be back. And I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Vehicle Radio.
Of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.